God. Now, his soul is in this body. Next time, his soul will be in another body. So according to the body, we are having designations. As soon as we get American body, I designation. According to the body, I create my designation. But one has to become free from all designations. That is called liberated state, in his own constitutional position. That position is eternal servant of God. That is the real position of every living entity. But because at the present moment the living entity is in contact with matter, so according to the material mold of the body, he is identifying himself with this body, and that is called material designation. I am American, I am Englishman, I am Hindu, I am Muslim, I am this, I am that. These are all designations. So, real perfection of life is without designation. And that is the real constitutional position. Jiver Swarupa Nitya Krishna Das. Actual position of living entity is... Don't disturb. Let it go. So, that is the perfection of life. And human life especially meant for to come to that transcendental position without any designation. Our Krishna consciousness movement is for that purpose. One should be always thinking of Krishna or God. That position is perfect position. And if one keeps himself in that designation-less position, always thinking of himself as part and parcel of God, then next life he goes back home, back to God. Taptadhi ham punar janma naiti. After quitting this body, he does not come back again to take another material body. He takes spiritual body or develops the spiritual body and goes back to home, back to Godhead, which means eternal blissful life of knowledge. Our this Krishna consciousness movement is for that purpose. We are trying to bring all men of different dimensions, different divisions, to come to this position, always thinking of that I am part and parcel of God. My real position is to serve God. Just like this finger is part and parcel of my body. The business of the finger is to serve the body. So long it is in normal condition, the finger is meant for serving the body. When the finger is painful or in abnormal condition, it cannot serve the body. Similarly, a living entity being part and parcel of God, when he cannot serve God, that is his abnormal condition. And when he serves God, that is his normal condition. That is designation-less position. There you are.
That's most interesting. To my mind, the nearest approach in the Christian religion is the Unitarian position, which I don't know if you're studying.
Christian religion is practically from the name it appears, Christian and Christian. Original word of the scribe comes from the Greek word Christo.
Anointed.
Eh?
Anointed.
Yes. Is Christo is Krishna.
From the Sanskrit?
Yes. Krishna is the popular word for Krishna. And Krishna is always anointed. The Pila. We follow this Pila. Krishna is anointed with the sandal pulp. So far I think there is some very nearest relationship with this Christian and Krishnian. Krishna is love of Godhead and love. We are preaching also the same philosophy. The love of Krishna is there in everyone's heart. But it is covered. And being covered, it is misplaced. We are loving our society, loving this body, loving our family, loving our kinsmen, or loving internationally human society. But this love is actually perverted reflection of real love of God. Because the love is not placed in the real place, therefore we are being frustrated in love. Just like in our country, Mahatma Gandhi, he loved his country very much. But at the last moment, the countrymen shot him down. He was shot down by his own countrymen. The love was paid by shooting him, and he lost his life. There are many instances.
Socrates? Christ?
Yes.
Okay.
So, here, the love propensity is being misplaced in this material world. That should be placed in God. Then the love will be perfect. Just like if you pour water on the leaves of the tree or branches of the tree, it is simply a waste of time. If you pour water on the root, then the the effect of pouring water is distributed. Similarly, foodstuff, if you put the foodstuff on your nose, on your eyes, on your ear, it is simply wasted. But if you put foodstuff to the mouth and the stomach, immediately the energy derived out of the foodstuff is distributed throughout the whole body. Similarly, if you love God, then automatically your love is distributed to everyone, every entity. But if you don't love, then you could simply love your country. Just like an Englishman, you love your country. German, he loves his country. But there is fight between Englishman and German. Because the love is misplaced. But in the Germans or the Englishmen or the Indians, they put their love in war, there will be no more fighting. Therefore, our philosophy is to educate people how to love God. That is real religion. Sabhi Pusa Paro Dharma Japu Bhakti Yogokhali. That is first-class religion, which teaches the follower how to love God. And as soon as he becomes a lover of God, just like I am Indian, But I have come to Western country to teach love of God. It is not that I am satisfied only myself, that I love God, that's all I do. But due to my love to God, I love others also. Because I am trying to teach them to love God, the self-love. So, if people take seriously this movement, how to love God, then the human society will be perfect.
May I suggest you've already made one contribution from India, which is almost the antithesis and corollary of your suggestion about pouring water on the leaves. We do get leaves from India, we pour water on them, and we make that delicious drink tea, which is one of those drinks which are used for inculcating the brotherhood of man.
That's all right, but do you think, is it natural to pour water on the leaves?
Well, why not? They're natural. Leaves,
no.
Water is natural.
You practically see water on the leaves, but you don't water on the root, it will dry up. If you put food on your nose, on your eyes, the eyes will be blind and the nostril will be suffocated. But if you put in the proper place, in the stomach, the energy will be distributed.
You know the natures of analogy.
Yes, this is natural. Similarly, if God is the root of everything, as we understand from Vedanta Sutra, God means the original root of everything. Janmadasya Jataha, the description of absolute truth of God is there in the Vedanta Sutra. That first aphorism is, what is God? Atata Brahma Jityasa, inquiry about God. The next aphorism is, God is that which is the root of everything, from which everything emanates. That is the perfect definition of God. Origin of everything. So, the same example is brought, that the root is the origin of the whole tree.
The seed is the origin of the whole tree, if I may say.
How you can be origin? Because you are the effect.
Seed.
The seed is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Bijoham Sarvabhutana. Everything that is living, the root or the seed, I am God. The seed is God. Bijoham Sarvabhutana. It's like the rose tree. It has got a seed. But where from this seed comes? Come on.
Nice.
Give him another try. This seed, original seed is God. Your theory of seed is very nice. But the original seed of everything is God. Cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita it is said, Ishara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Karana, Kara means cause. Cause of all causes. Seed of all seeds. There are different seeds.
Causa, causa.
Cause of all causes.
That's Latin?
Yes.
Similar.
What is that?
A Latin legal phrase, causa, causa, the cause of the causes.
Oh, that's it. So, God is cause of all causes. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it is explicitly said, Aham sarvasya prabhava. मत्ता सर्वं प्रवर्तते इति मत्या भजन्ति मां बुधा भाव समन्विता. I am the original, source of everything. Everything is emanating from me. Iti Marta, understanding like this, Buddha. Buddha means those who are conversant, thoroughly in knowledge. Iti Matya Bhajanti Mam Buddha Bhava Samandhi. In ecstasy, oh, here is the original form, all forms. So, in this way, those who are advanced in knowledge, Buddha, they engage themselves in the service of the original cause of all causes. He is the cause of all causes, but he has no cause. That is God. Anadi Radhi Govind. He has no cause, but he is the cause of all others. That is God. That's why I am the effect. My father is the cause. Similarly, my grandfather is the cause of my father. My grandfather is the effect of the cause, great-grandfather. Go on, searching on, searching on. So when you find out the original cause, that is God. That is the definition of God.
The usual answer to the prime mover argument is, who moved the prime mover? What is the logical necessity for a first cause? Would you agree with that?
Well, I think it's inherent in your definition of something that is omnipotent that it, I might say, is necessary to have no beginning in order to have no end. It's really a concept. Whether it exists or not doesn't matter.
Yes, but even negatives imply limitation. If something has only positive attributes, it's limited if you exclude negative attributes. Or is that just a...
Well, no, everything has all attributes. We only cause, or call them to be caused, positive or negative, because we have a tendency to want to think in terms of dichotomies, good and bad. Whereas, really, if you're a scientist, you say, this exists. It's only when morals come in that you say, some things are good and some things are bad, and you start making antinomies. Really, your Godhead will comprehend all those things, and to him, there's no such thing as good or evil, but to him they are all of value. Mm. It's man who saw the good and evil.
I wasn't particularly thinking of the good and evil values. I was simply thinking of negative attributes.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't know quite what you mean unless you define the negative attribute. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Not beginning.
Well, that, with respect, I think, doesn't really follow, because there are some things that don't have opposites or negatives of their nature. This is what I say. There are certain categories of things to which, if somebody says, now what's the opposite of that, you have to say there isn't an opposite, because it isn't the sort of thing that has an opposite.
So you would accept the prime mover argument?
Well, it's not an argument, it's a postulate.
A postulate, then?
I don't accept it either side. I mean, you have to accept it if you're going to. You know, a total focus, so to speak. You can't have it halfway.
Positive and negative, just like the sun, the back side is the negative, and the front side is the positive. Light and darkness.
But the sun doesn't have a back side of darkness. It's light all round.
I have to say, in relationship with the sun, the planet, in the front side there is light, in the back side there is darkness. But the darkness is the effect of the light. Where the light is absent, that is darkness.
Only to an observer. If there's no observer there, there's no difference between light and dark.
This is the actual position. It's like this is sun. But this side is light, this side is darkness. So light and darkness, two opposite elements, but it is due to the same cause. Absence of light is darkness, and presence of light is light.
Mm-hmm. Or I say there are some things that have those dichotomies and others don't.
So actually the cause is one. But in different position, one side is light, one side is darkness. Therefore, the cause cannot be different. Cause is one. But under different position, it appears. This is light, this is darkness. So bad, which you consider bad, that is also caused by the Supreme Cause. To the Supreme, there is no good or bad, everything is absolute. Just like the sun is always light. But in relationship with sun, the planet, one side is dark, one side is black. So black means that is also caused by the light. Absence of light, that is black. Dark.
From respect, it's not caused by the light, it's the absence of light.
Absence, that absence is also indirectly the cause, is the light.
No, because your illustration you gave of the light of the sun falling on one side and making that light on the other side dark.
Yes.
But you can also have a body which is in the complete absence of any light anyway, so there won't be any differentiation.
No, there is light. The light is now visible. Light is there, just like we say that our relationship with God is there. One is conscious, another is unconscious. Otherwise, God consciousness is there. Therefore, any process that awakens that consciousness, that is perfect process. The consciousness is there. That is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, an authorized book, the Krishna, Nitya Siddha Krishna Bhakti Sattva-guna. This God consciousness is not something artificial. The God consciousness is there. Just like these European boys and girls, they are now devotees of Krishna. Not that artificially we have imposed this Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness was there by under certain process of treatment that has been awakened.
Oh, that's why I think it's better to accept that as it is rather than make analogies which are dangerous.
You may make analogy or not analogy, but the thing is that Krishna consciousness is there, but it is covered. As soon as this covering is taken away, it is uncovered. The original position comes out.
I believe you made one observation, which is rather in the British tradition, I believe, where you said that if there was no observer, then there would be no such thing as light and dark. Isn't this sparkly?
Yes, because light and dark are subjective reactions. Really, as a scientist would say, there are wavelengths of a certain type in one part of the universe, and the other they're absent. But until you have an observer, you can't notice that.
But the planet was still there, everything would be a father, right?
Yes. Yeah. Samuel Johnson quite rightly refuting that by kicking the stone.
Yeah.
No, actually, there is no darkness. Take it, sun as it is, whole. There is no darkness. And everything is in sunshine. All the planets, they are rotating in sunshine. So, under certain condition, one part is becoming dark, another part is light. But actually the whole universe is full with sunshine. Sarvam Khalidam Brahma, that is the exact definition given in Sanskrit. Everything is light, Brahma.
Well, that's another postulate. You can build any theory according to the number of postulates you're willing to accept, which cannot be analyzed. It's really the basis of science, that the atom, as originally thought of by Theocritus and others, is the thing that you cannot go beyond and cut down farther. And the same with your philosophy or theology, that you go down until you can find nothing except, as you say, the cows are cows' hands, and then you build back again from that. But that's what I was saying earlier on. the Krishna is very close to the Unitarian position in Christianity. It's
yes.
far more acceptable to every type of Christian than any of the specific creeds or sects, you know, Church of England, Anglicans, and Roman Catholics, and every other form of Protestant. And you have that greater universality
yes.
than most religions. And your Tibetans will accept your faces in the same way that the Westerner could. A Tibetan could accept your position.
Tibetan? Tibetan?
Yes.
What is that, brother?
He is person. You've heard of the Dalai Lama.
Yes. What does he say?
Well, his position would be the same as yours, wouldn't it, in their religion.
You mean the Tibetan Buddhist attitude more to Godhead would be the same as the Krishna?
Yes.
But
they have that same basis.
So far we know that Buddhists, they do not believe in God, existence of God.
No, they believe in this existence of a godness, if you like.
This is very subjective. The Buddhist point of view in general seems to be very much that of the 19th century English rationalist, the agnostic in its literal sense.
That's why I say the Unitarian
comes
closest to it.
Yeah. Well, the fact that a Godhead is impossible to comprehend, so I may exist or may not exist, in very brief terms.
But if you accept its existence, then it's present in everybody, which is exactly what you say. Whether they utilize it, whether, as you call it, uncovered or not, the degree of which they are conscious of it, is a different thing.
It is a question of consciousness, development of consciousness.
That's where Jung, I think, is so very good when saying that the real evolution of man's mind has been the ability to produce more and more of the functions of whatever the mind may be. Because the mind is just as indefinable as God. We know what the brain is, we don't know what the mind is. You get more and more of it under conscious control, instead of being irrationally eruptive.
But there is samambhona of that realization. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mang prapaddhate. After many, many births of this mental evolutionary process, when actually he becomes wise, he becomes God conscious and surrenders to God. That is given. That evolution will go on. But when it comes to the summit, that is God's generation. Vasudeva, God is the God of all gods. That is final realization. Unless one comes to that point, he has not come to the perfection of the evolutionary process of the mind and intellect.
How does our philosophy define
the
mind and intelligence?
Mind is its instrument. The mind's position is accepting and rejecting. And intellect helps the mind what to reject and what to accept. And that intelligence is of the soul. Background of intelligence is the soul. First of all, body concept and gross life, ordinary man, animals, they do not know, except the body. Higher than body concept of life, the exercise of the mind, mental speculation. And that mental speculation is adjusted by intelligence. And that intelligence belongs to the soul. Therefore soul is the ultimate. And soul is the part and parcel of God. Therefore, God is the Supreme. So, the mental speculation or evolution of mental exercise, when it comes to the summit, that is God's reality. Vasudeva sarvamiti, samahatma sudurlam. When one realizes God is everything, that Mahatma, that great soul, is very rare. That is the statement in the world. Mahatma means whose mind is great. His mind is great. He's not thinking ordinary things. He's thinking of greater subject matter. They are called Mahatma. Broader minded. Broad mind.
Do you differentiate, as Jung would do, it's only a method of attempting to comprehend the difference of things, the difference between thinking and feeling as rational functions?
That is the function of the mind, thinking, feeling and willing, psychological.
You do active. Differentiate them separately?
Yes.
Yes. And intuition as well?
Sankalpa vikalpa, this is in Sanskrit, it is called sankalpa vikalpa, or accepting and rejecting. That is mind function. I think something and again I reject it.
You also react too.
You say in any language, but the function of the mind is flickering. Just like when Arjuna was advised by Krishna to train the mind by meditation, by yoga system. He said that, Krishna, it is very difficult for me. Chanchala hi mana krishna pramati valavadriram. My mind is very, agitated. I think to control the mind is as impossible as controlling the wind. Chanchala hi mana krishna pramati valavadriram. And it is very difficult to, there is a high wind and if you want to control it, and it is impossible. Similarly, I think the activities of the mind, thinking, feeling and willing to control them is very difficult for you. Actually, that is the position. So long we shall be on the mental platform, there will be no fixity of conclusion. That is not possible. We have to accept something for the time being, then again reject it. Therefore, all mental speculators differ. Naso murik jasya batamana bhinno. A philosopher is not philosopher until he differs from other people. Naso murik jasya batamana bhinno. Unless you place a different thesis, he will not be accepted as a good philosopher.
Therein it differs from science,
because
if science is accurate and correct,
there
can only be one.
But a philosophy is taken as the science of sciences.
Theology used to be that term.
Yes.
It shows a misconception of the word science.
And so far I remember, I was also a student of philosophy, Dr. R. Kuhar. He said, the philosophy is science of sciences. The science the theory begins from philosophy. Philosophy is the science of science. But according to Vedic Varsha, a philosopher is not a philosopher if he has not a different opinion from it, another Naso Muni Jasya Matam Na Bhindam. Therefore, through the philosopher, you cannot come to the right conclusion. Tarko Apratishtha, if you simply go on arguing, that will also not help you. If you simply read scriptures, that will also not help you. Because there are different scriptures. Bible is different from Vedas and Veda is different from Quran. So, by argument you cannot come to the conclusion. By simply reading scriptures you cannot come to the conclusion. By following the philosophers you cannot come to the conclusion. Therefore, the truth is very confidential. Dharmasya tattam nihitam guhaya. It is kept very confidential. Then how to have it? Mahajana jena gata sapantha. we have to follow the great personalities who have actually realized God. That is the conclusion.
The trouble is that you only have the opportunity of hearing or reading what somebody else has said, what they've said. So you're back again on the trouble of diversity of observation and opinion.
Now, so far we are concerned, we are receiving knowledge directly from God. That's why Bhagavad Gita, it is accepted, spoken by the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, if we take conclusion from the speeches delivered by the Supreme Personality of God, that is bad. That is a very easy authority. That just like the other day I was explaining to Mr. Patrick that you are searching after who is your father. But if you simply ask your mother, who is my father, the truth is immediately discovered.
Being a lawyer, I would say that doesn't necessarily follow.
Why?
Well, it's a wise woman sometimes who knows who's the father.
That is your misfortune if your mother achieves it. That is a difference. That's a difference. We are expecting mother will not cheat us.
Some of them don't know.
That is a different thing. Suppose you are a lawyer. I have put faith in anything new. But if you cheat me, I lose the case. That is another thing.
Sometimes it's just honest ignorance.
No. Generally, mother is honest. If one is unfortunate, he has got a mother like that, cheated. Generally expected, a mother is honest. Mother loves his child. He gives the good information. That is mother's position. But if someone has got a different mother, the same thing can be applicable to you also, you are lawyer. Everywhere, and depend on you, that if you conduct the case in a different way, just to make profit to other parties, you can do that. That is my misfortune. But I have to depend on you for conducting the case. I have no other means.
And the poor lawyer has to depend upon the other person in telling him what is supposed to be the true facts.
But my position is, as soon as I appoint my lawyer, I will have to depend fully on you. I cannot do anything else. Whatever you advise me, I have to do that.
Yes, but whatever you tell me depends upon what advice I give to you.
That's all right, but as you say, the mother gives misinformation. Similarly, if you misguide me, that you can do. But I'll have to depend on it.
But not deliberately. A lot of people don't know that
no,
they're in
sometimes it is done deliberately. Sometimes it is done deliberately. Because everyone in this material world is imperfect. Therefore, there is tendency of cheating. That is one of the qualifications of the conditioned soul. He becomes mistaken. He becomes illusive. He cheats and his senses are imperfect.
Well, I'm sorry, I think you're using the word cheat in a much broader sense. We would use cheat as conscious misstatement.
Yes, that is
as
cheating.
Opposed to a person who doesn't realize that what he says doesn't happen to be true.
Conscious, suppose you think it is right, but it is wrong. That is also cheating. Without knowing the thing perfectly well, if you deliver your knowledge to somebody, that is cheating.
Well, I think that's being a bit hard when a person is not, he's trying his best to do something and he doesn't intend to mislead.
If you misguide somewhere or other without sufficient knowledge, there is also cheating.
Well, we would say, using the English language properly, that's a misuse of the word.
But generally, if I am not in perfect knowledge, if I guide you, that is, according to Vedic version, it is cheating. You must be confident of the knowledge perfectly. Then if you deliver that knowledge, that is right. Just like our position is, that we say what Krishna says, Krishna is God. So we say what Krishna says, We don't say anything which does not Krishna, Krishna does not say. Therefore you are confident that we are giving, delivering the right message. We don't manufacture our own philosophy or words. We simply say, Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Paritajya Mam Ekam Saranam. Krishna, God says that you simply surrender unto me. I take charge of you. We are preaching the same philosophy, that you surrender to God and you become happy. Because God takes charge of you. We don't manufacture our word. That is not cheating.
Yeah, this comes back to what you were saying earlier on. You were saying it isn't necessary or sufficient to read the scriptures. Well, if you, as you just told me, you say what Krishna has said,
yes.
Well then if I can
but
find
Krishna
it
Krishna has said that is not scripture.
No, but I mean, if it's written somewhere, I can read that. I don't need anybody else to tell me.
That's all right, but if it is accepted by the great acharyas that he is God, then there is no doubt. Yes, Krishna is accepted God by all the acharyas, bona fide acharyas, authorities.
What I think what Prabhupada has been saying is that a spiritual master is requisite in order to transmit knowledge, even though it may be revealed in scripture, to the student according to time and place, just like someone may be able to read in a book about how to perform a brain operation. But unless there is a master there to transmit that knowledge into reality, it's useless. It can't be performed.
That merely means, you might say, if you're going to be very thorough and precise, that it could be explained in greater detail, but it's easier to do it with a master.
Yes.
You can learn a foreign language by reading a book, although it's much easier if you're
yes,
talking
yes.
to people.
That's why here is the medicine, diverting. So I have accepted this medicine through a bona fide doctor. Although it is made for diabetes, I have not accepted this medicine, neither is advised. It is advised that this medicine should be accepted by a bona fide physician. So I cannot see properly whether it is good for me. But when the physician, a qualified physician says, yes, it is bona fide, you can use it this way. That is nice.
Coming back to your previous point, if you made a mistake and it's the wrong medicine, would you say he cheated you? Is that the point you're getting at?
This is what one is
made. Because if he purports to be a physician.
But if he is a physician and he makes a mistake, a perfectly genuine mistake.
Therefore we say that we have to receive knowledge from a person who does not commit any mistake. That is our proposition.
Well, that's again like God. If you define it that way, you're over.
That seems a bit...
That's what I say.
This can be proven. This can be tested. If someone is cheating or not cheating, it can be tested on a factual basis. Mm-hmm. Similarly, this science can be tested.
Yes.
It has
observation and experiment.
If it has effect,
yes.
A good effect,
yes.
Or if it has a bad effect.
Yes. So similarly, just like the Krishna consciousness moment is coming down from Krishna through the chain of disciplic succession. So if it is actually given in definition or that process, it is effective. And it is actually being experienced that it is effective.
Just like this medicine.
Yeah.
Which may not, unfortunately, for Krishna, this is the danger of analysis. This medicine may work in 99 cases out of 100. In the 100th one, it will kill the poor chap. Now, you can't say that the physician was cheating in prescribing it to the 100th chap, because he just didn't know.
On the other hand, 50 other medicines won't work. It is very dangerous, and that is also dangerous.
But then some people have to have a concrete example, because they haven't any powers of abstract conceptions. It's when you analyze the analogy that you can see its limitations.
Well, analyze, of course, it is not always perfect method. Analogy means the greatest number of similar points. That is, perfection of analogy is there when there is the greater number of similar points. But we give sometimes the analogy as we understand material. But so far, our this Krishna consciousness movement, there is no need of analogy. It is accepted as a truth. And Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And whatever he says is truth. There is no mistake. And if we carry that message, there is no mistake.
In other words, Krishna is the voice of your God.
Krishna is God himself. That is accepted. We accept Krishna, Ishara Parama Krishna. Ishara. Ishara means the controller. Just like here there are controllers. But here any controller is controlled by another controller. But if Ishara, God means who has no other controller. He is the supreme controller. That is described in the Brahma Sangha. Ishara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme controller. Here, any controller, his controller, just as this physician, he has learned his medical science from another physician. Another physician, another physician. So, we are not the supreme physician or supreme controller.
May I give you an example of the fallacy there? Is that Sir Alexander Fleming didn't learn his curative antibiotics from any other person. He discovered them by natural scientific methods of observation and inference and experiment.
But his preliminary knowledge of scientific handling must have been learned from somebody else.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, therefore, he has a teacher. He cannot say that, or he has taken the techniques of other scientists and he has experimented in the laboratory appliances. That he cannot say that he has he invented the laboratory appliances.
No, but it's power of observation that's important.
That is all right. That is all right.
That's in him and
but
nobody else.
But he has taken help from other scientists' methods.
In other words, everyone operates under a certain set of restrictions, controls, that are not of their own choosing. Everyone is in that category. They may think, I am the controller of my own destiny. But actually they are being controlled on every side.
That's so, but it's only when they break out from that control by, as I say, making an observation or having an intuition that isn't inherent in the system of control in which they've been brought up, that they make an advance of any sort. You see, people with, I always give this example of Sir Alexander Fleming and Florey and others, people had been trained that dirty petri dishes should be thrown away because they're mouldy and they will interfere with the experiment. This happens time and again, whereas the man suddenly thinks, I will have a look at this, I will ignore that. He breaks away from his control.
It wasn't anything new, it's simply a rearrangement of existing data, of existing processes.
Nobody had ever, they were controlled to reject it. This is what so often happens. Perry Mason is a wonderful example of that. The person always picks out something that's been rejected in his celebrated works.
I don't know Perry Mason
is a very popular courtroom, as they or trial lawyer, as they call him in America. And a person called Earl Stanley Gardner has written a large number of books.
Mm-hmm. But a person's knowledge in the material world will always be imperfect. No matter how much he may advance in scientific knowledge, he will never be able to solve the problems of birth and death and disease and old age.
Yes, but I mean, as the Americans I really would say rather coarsely, so what? You can live without a culture. You don't, if you start worrying about whether you'll ever be able to comprehend the insight, you will really not get through the day.
But the goal of life being to become satisfied with my life is not met in that way.
I agree that to be satisfied with life is to cut down your desire for omniscience. To be satisfied that you can only hope to do 0.0001 of the things you would like to do, to comprehend 0.0001 of the things that are possible. If you are content with that, you may be content with life. Otherwise, you'll be one of these dreadful people who become paranoics. Because the world overpresses you, it's so big.
Well, contentment, the death is there. If I, somehow or other, make a compromise, that is if I do. But I don't like to die. There is old age. I don't want to be old. But if I make a compromise, that is the difference. But my desire is not to become old, not to become attacked by disease, not to die. These are my desires. So I can make some compromise, being unable to solve the problem. That is different. But these are the problems. These are the problems.
It was once rather well put by some woman who said to Mr. Carlyle, who was in a way of being a philosopher, "You know, Mr. Carlyle, I accept the universe." He said, "Madam, you'd better." This is the beginning of, could I say, the reason.
And there are sentiments like Kapoor said, "England, I love you with all thy heart." That is another thing. There is a compromise.
Now, the difficulty in any form of discussion like this is very fascinating, but it does show you the limitations of transmission of feelings and ideas and all those complicated things by a simple verbal process. This is the real problem.
And Zen immediately comes to mind, where the problem is recognized, immediately acted on, and it's admitted that there's the impossibility of transmission.
This is where you can't get a feeling across by writing a textbook on it.
Yes.
I think
one thing is that somebody is concluding that to solve this problem, birth, death, old age, disease, it is impossible. There is one issue. But another issue is that falling, that there is possibility of control over the birth, death, old age, and disease. So why not this is good? Who does not say there is impossible? No, there is possible. It's like we follow Krishna consciousness. Krishna says that taktadi hankanar janma naiti mami tipa, that anyone who understands me thoroughly, he, after quitting this body, no more accepts this material body, but comes to me. Now, so long I accept this material body, these problems are there, birth, death, old age and disease. Then, if I don't accept this material body, then these problems are solved in here.
This is what they call solution by denial.
It's not consolation. It is a fact, because it is followed. But then you have come to the original position, to follow the Mahajana. Mahajana jena tatasama. Our thought is guided by that Mahajana. We accept the Mahajana, the great personalities who have achieved success. We follow.
Let us now praise famous men and our fathers who forget us, as they oddly enough sing always at the Christ-giving girls' schools. I've never really understood why.
But the whole idea is that these personalities have to be in a living form, not just in the past. They live in the form of a spiritual master who is there to guide the person, not just praise some spirit, someone in the past. And that's this process is transmitted in a human form, personally.
That is the process in material world also. You are lawyer because you have studied laws under some big lawyer. So the process is coming.
I assure you, Swami, that the reverse was true. I went to Oxford. I sat at the feet, as we would put it, of one of the most tiresome men I ever met in my life. He gave me an extraordinary distaste for law. Any law I have learned has had to be learned the hard way by, looking at statutes, looking at cases. So I regret to say that I have my own personal experiences.
That is, of course, later on, in the beginning, you were a student of a law.
That's a useful analogy, because some people have found God, it doesn't matter who they look for it.
Yeah. Well, this is the old thing, seek and ye shall find, or be still and ye shall know. I think this is the essential feature that you've been saying, is that really this grace comes to anybody if they're only willing to accept it. Because it's inherently there.
With respect, Aquinas, among many other people, proved that it's absolutely impossible to establish a rational grounding for religion. In other words, trying to logically prove axioms is logically impossible.
Yes, it's not necessary.
Okay.
But by verbalizing this philosophy of the absolute, it trains the student in accepting the inexperience, that which is only experience, by leading him to that point. Because certainly we have to have some verbal confirmation of this truth.
But some philosophy enough don't need it. Some very simple people can have a very true spiritual life without ever needing to verbalize it. Usually because they have, this is where I think it's perfectly clear, they have followed some father figure or mother figure, and you know, absorbed it.
Just like my
sometimes.
Child. She is to that point without having any rational knowledge.
But some far from simple people also reach the same point. People like Blake, for example, Buddha. Extending it to its own, the simple person. These sorts of faith aren't only childlike faith, it's often found in simple people.
It's easier for the simple person, but he doesn't have all these mental complicated doubts and arguments with himself.
Well, it's said that as one progresses more and more in spiritual life, he becomes simpler and more innocent. But in the beginning, he may have had to comprehend it on some verbal level.
I often used to say to my students, one's got to remember in anything in life to realize the difference between simple and complicated, which is objective, and easy and difficult, which is subjective. In other words, sometimes a simple thing may be terribly difficult for a person to get hold of, whereas a complicated thing you can find quite easy.
So your student has to follow your instinct. That means accepts authority.
But even so, even if he's working something out for himself, to some people it comes terribly easy.
To accept authority does not mean one should be blind. But the real source of knowledge comes from authority.
You then reject the idea that fear of God is...
No, I don't reject. The thing is that the perfect knowledge is received from the authority who is beyond the material defects.
So what I mean is fear is not necessary for learning from an authoritarian source.
The authority must be perfect. Then otherwise the knowledge is not perfect.
He's saying that you don't necessarily have to fear the authority before you accept him.
There's no question of fear. There's no question of fear.
That's what I thought. That doesn't come in at all.
It is out of love, out of affection, the reciprocation.
But that's what I think very often, that it is fear that prevents people from accepting.
That's true. He said that sometimes someone may fear authority, so that prevents him from accepting.
Of course, when you accept that is not fear, that is obedience, respect. Respect. That's not fear. Just like my students, they are not fearful of me. Because I came from India. So what reason they have got to be afraid of me? Neither I am very, I mean, the greater man. But they receive the philosophy, they understand the philosophy, therefore they have got a respect for me. The teacher should be offer the due respect. That is not fear. That is not out of fear. Of love.
I was saying that fear prevents it.
There is no fear because they are quite at liberty to ask me any question, and they are asking, and the answer is there. I receive so many letters daily, so they are not afraid of me. But out of affection, they offer respect.
May I make one strange statement, but I think it is rather true of the present world. People are almost afraid or fear love. It's almost as though it's something rather sissy or, it gets so mixed up with sentimentality.
I don't know what it is rather than fear.
Well, I mean, if you don't know, if you're afraid, it's usually because of absolute knowledge or... terrified of the unknown.
That's very true. That's why clown children and such like, and things like the Krishna consciousness movement, who not only profess love, but into action is so scaring to lots of people.
Yeah. Just like the child is afraid of the father. There is affection. My father will be displeased if I do. Father has said, don't tell me. So I will touch my father. So that fear and affection is both in there. It is not simply that he is afraid of the father, but the affection. So, to become obedient to the authority, there is a tint of fear also. But that is based on affection, that is not actually.
They were saying also that in this age, particularly now, there's a great fear of loving someone or something on the part of a large population. They think that
because there is no real love, there is expectation of being frustrated in love.
Rebuffed.
Yeah, rebuffed. So therefore
that's
they are
terrifying. Yeah.
So, because everything in this material world is by matter and affliction, therefore we sometimes love somebody and we become frustrated. So therefore others see this man loved that girl and he is now frustrated. Why is like that? That is due to frustration. But there is a perfectional state. There is a perfectional state. Therefore we say this is by matter and affliction. Just like our Radha Krishna. That is the perfectional state of love. Radharani is a young girl and Krishna is a young boy. There is love. So originally, this love between young boy and girl is there. And that is in perfect state. And here, in this material, the same thing is perfectly reflected. Therefore, it is imperfect. So we have come to the perfectional state. Not be afraid and give it up. Frustration. But love is there. But there is a perfectional stage of love. We have to learn that.
Which the Greeks called agape, as opposed to the old other form of eros.
Yes. Lust and eros is lust. Agape is pure love, transcendental love.
Yes, there is. This Krishna consciousness movement means to bring everything to the perfectional stage. The others there, out of frustration, they want to stop all activity. That is voidism. They stop all these activities. You know, Buddha philosophy is more or less based on this voidism. Make everything null and void. No more activities, no more love. We don't see that. Just like he cannot see properly because the eye is a disease. To cure the disease. And then you see. Proper. And other says, all right, pluck it up. The disease and the eye, take up. And that's not a very good proposition. We say that make treatment and make the eyes to see properly. And then it will go. Our proposition is. Sarvapadi minimuktam, tatparatina, we simply cleanse the process. The seeing process, we cleanse. We don't pluck out the eyes out of frustration. Don't see. Make everything void. No, we don't see. Because there is no void. It is simply frustration. There is variety, nice variety, spiritual variety. We are bringing people to that position.
I
want to
say it's very interesting.
Ask one last question. The Bhagavad Gita, do you accept that as historically an historical fact?
Truth is historical fact, is.
Bhagavad Gita, did it take place? There was a battlefield?
Yes, there's a historical fact. Mahabharata is the history of Greater India. Mahabharata means, Maha means greater. So formally, 5,000 years ago, the whole planet was Bharat, India. India it is now called. Actually the name is Bharat. Bharat is the name given after the reign of Maharaj, one king, Bharat. He was the ruler, emperor of the whole world. After his name, this planet is called Bharat. This whole planet. Mahabharat, therefore. Mahabharat is greater India, or greater Bharat. Of course, the headquarter was in India, but it was greater. According to Mahabharata history, and this Bhagavad Gita is given there in the Mahabharata, therefore it is historical. And actually it is historical, because the battlefield is still existing.
Kurukshetra.
Battlefield. Yes. The battle was still on. Yes. Now, battlefield, when the battle took place, that field is still there. There is a railway station, Kurukshetra. And that Kurukshetra is still Dharma Kshetra, a religious place. People go for pilgrimage. And in the Vedas also it is stated that Kurukshetra is Dharma Jade. You perform religious rituals in Kurukshetra. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. It is fact, historical fact. It is not imagination. But many commentators have taken as imagination. Therefore, they are misled. It is historical.
Well, will you? Can you take the saffron robe up to wear?
I would not need a robe if I took it. Very generous and proper. Make sure we appreciate the kind of interest.
You may ask more questions.
Well, I'm sure there are other people who are.
They wanted to have the opportunity of discussing that.
Well, I'm sure
it's
right. Well, I
understood that
something could
happen. Next time the Swamis in England, perhaps, yeah. Met some members with interest in comparative religion.
Yeah. Indeed, I think that would be very, and also it would be very interesting if you would care to take our test.
Test?
Yes. Yeah. The entrance qualification.
What kind of questions?
No, just simple intelligence, that's all.
Test over people are at IQ tests.
That's all. Call it test, but it's something. We've got nothing better at the moment.
Well,
we think our activities have our intelligence.
Spiritual. Quite different.
Because above the mind, above the body, there is mind. Above the mind, there is intelligence. And above the intellect there is soul. And above the soul there is God. So we are talking of relationship between God and the soul.
Right.
So it is above body, mind and intellect.
This is what interests me. One has this hierarchical or superior attitude even in the statements you just made. That things are above rather than all contained.
Mm.
Which is what I feel is easier.
No, because we take from God, there is no mystery. There is no mystery. Otherwise, he cannot be God.
But I mean, this is just unnecessary. This is tautological, because since this is in your definition of God, you don't have to go any farther.
The God means is above mystery,
yes.
Above illusion, above cheating, above imperfection.
There's a central premise that everything is simultaneously one and different. It's like flowers. There are many flowers, roses, but within flowers there is variety.
Which demonstrates the danger of analogy, because it's not. It really does. This is, I think this is the point that Dr. Wesley is trying to make, that it's impossible to talk about physics and the language of chemistry. It's impossible to talk about.
So when he says there's a gradation, that we see a gradation between the soul is higher than the body, this is also applied.
Soul is higher than the body, mind and intellect.
Yes, but that is only because we've learned, I think, when we were small,
background
to look up to high people.
It's also lower on each side of it, in the middle. outside.
This is that, you see, unconsciously you grow up with all these sort of prejudices which are necessary. You've got to have some sort of time scale, you've got to have some sort of measuring scale, and therefore you tend to look up, and therefore you think high things are more important than low things. You talk about high position. You don't need a chap sitting on a pedestal.
Inherently, you find the rose is better than the daisy.
No, some people might prefer the daisy.
But the qualities are there, inherent to the rose, which are preferable to those in the daisy.
Why? Tell me why. I mean, you haven't given me any reason for saying it's better.
What is that? The rose has nice scent. It appears
beautiful.
Beautiful.
But I like daisies. I think daisies are more beautiful than roses.
They have no scent.
It's all subjective, isn't it?
You see, some people hate scent.
And
you see, that a lot of people would like a red rose because that has a symbolism to them. Mm-hmm. Why have a yellow rose? It must have a sort of subjective reaction. It's nothing to do with the fact that it's got a chromatic wavelength.
Then there is a cause. That means there is a cause. We have to accept the cause. So that cause, you go further. You will find out the cause of all causes.
You see, what one is me, Swami, is that there are two ways of making sure you live, each containing this necessity of eating. Now, some people eat their food. They digest it. They live perfectly healthy. They know nothing about carbohydrates, proteins and fats. They know nothing about saliva. They know nothing about enzymes or digestion. And they live quite satisfactory lives. Other people start worrying about whether they've got the right amount of calories, the right amount of vitamins, whether they're taking enough water with the meal or not. One wonders that if you're starting to worry about that, it means somehow you're less perfect than the person who is able to digest quite happily without the knowledge.
Well, if you say like that, the majority of living entities, they are eating without this knowledge of enzyme and other things. So if you take boars, the boars are dead, just like human beings. A few human beings are interested in analyzing this enzyme. The human beings are very small quantity. There are 8,400,000 species of life. They are eating in their natural way, and that's quite healthy.
The knowledge of the process is comparatively important. If you want to enjoy it more, you don't learn about enzymes and protein, you learn about the right sort of wine and the...
So enjoyment is the standard.
Yes.
And there, what worries me, I'm going to stage further. You do tend to find the people who want to understand about digestion are those whose stomachs are not very good.
And another thing, just like grass, straw, the cows are eating straw and giving the most vitaminous food, milk, full of vitamin A and D. But if you scientifically say that there is vitamin in grass and straw, then you eat straw and produce vitamin there. Why it is so?
Now they come from
your analysis of enzyme and vitamin. How you can say milk will die? Why this law is there? The cow is producing most vitaminous food, milk, by simply eating dry grass and straw.
No, with respect, Swami, no, by simply imbibing at the same time bacteria which flourish in its intestine and are necessary for it to be able to metabolize the straw. We couldn't metabolize straw.
That means you are lacking that bacteria. You are lacking that bacteria. The bacteria which cows have, you have
them. We've got them, but we kill them. Exactly, I mean, it is a trouble. It's unwise. If you can accept the concept as a whole, there's no need to try and do an analysis.
I don't accept your... the point you were making when you began that analogy, I think, was that people that do look for spiritual knowledge, you know, in quotes, it would appear that there's something wrong with them.
Well, no, not always. I say there are some people who obviously, if they have to look for it, they haven't got it. The people who've got it don't need to look for it.
Resorting to the accursed thing again. Some people go to the doctor that are sick, and some people that aren't sick are hypochondriacs.
It's just like if someone points out to you, for instance, that this material world is based upon sense gratification. Everyone is striving to gratify the impulse of their senses. That's a verbalization of a truth which is not apparent in any other way, or it's very difficult to find out in any other way. So suddenly that knowledge awakens one to a higher desire, pertaining to something higher. So that is the point of verbalization of these things. If we are silent, how will someone be awakened to that truth? That simply by saying this material world spins upon this principle of material sense gratification. That's the truth that can be easily verbalized.
But I think there's a double difference always with these things between the subject and the object. In other words, it's objectively necessary to gratify the senses, if you like. In other words, you've got to have diet and things like that, and you've got to breathe.
Yes.
But you can also get a subjective pleasure out of doing that, which is different from just doing it automatically. Sometimes we know when we're busy, we just shovel our food down. Mm-hmm. We don't really have any gratification out of it. We just have...
Yes, there are those four basic principles that are mentioned: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which are natural to the animals or to the humans. But man is using his propensity, his conscious propensity, to simply enjoy material nature on a more advanced level, to eat better, to sleep more, to have better sex life, and so on. It still boils down to that. Everyone is seeking sense pleasure.
Such propensities are there in animals. Then what makes the difference between animal and man?
Well, animals, as far as I know, don't conduct scientific research.
What is the point of scientific research? Why do scientists make their analysis? And what are the advancements of science used for? What do men use them for? Largely,
Freudian would say, to compensate their feeling of inadequacy if they have been not sufficiently treated with empathy and love when they were young.
But
objectively, it's to gratify the senses. That's what Freud said, of course. He's the great chap on gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Jung sensibly said, oh, that's not sufficient. You've got to have the spiritual side in life as well.
Yeah.
He comprises. Mm-hmm. Jung's got the advantage of being, you might say, a higher stage, to use the word of the Swami, because he is able to contain the lower things.
The conclusion comes in this way, that to remain animals, scientific animals, the propensity that is there, sense gratification, but the man is trying to make it scientific. That means to remain animal, but become scientific, that's all. Scientific animal.
But at the same time, he's a spiritual animal, and it's interesting to find that in this 20th century, science is rather replacing spirituality. You know, people in the past gave religion an enormous importance, and science was practically unknown. Now we're going the other way around.
That scientific spirituality, that is advancement more than the animal. Otherwise, if you simply remain on the kingdom, eating, sleeping, making, and defend, trying to be there. He remains animal. But when that scientific research goes to the spiritual field, that is special prerogative of the human.
This replacement by science of religion has proven inadequate also for the 20th
century.
Because how can it satisfy ultimately the question?
In the same way, how can you satisfy a person's lack of emotional content in his job by giving him more money? Half the trouble about people's jobs is they have no emotive content now because there's no rapport between them and their boss. They practically no intellectual interest because they have a routine job in a factory. And you know, they are really deprived in a bad way.
I think what worries lots of people about lots of religions is the Buddhist example. of pointing a finger at the moon and confusing the finger with the moon.
But one of the difficulties, and I think this is true when I was saying simple people, using that in a broader sense, some people cannot get anything at all unless they have a little picture.
Yeah.
You know, it helps them.
Yeah.
Rather like the dear old lady who found the
word
Mesopotamia.
That we give the picture. It is God.
It's like Christ. He came to speak with a very ignorant class of men. And he was forced to speak in parables and stories.
Ah, yes. Now, parable is better than an analogy. An analogy is an intellectual thing. Whereas a parable is a human thing. It's got a warmth in it. It's in three dimensions, not a cross-section. And he was, of course, awfully clever and beautiful.
I don't think your friend Christmas Humphrey would agree with either of those statements.
Knowing him very well, I would be surprised at what he would agree with. I would be perfectly happy to feel that I was agreeing with
him. Oh, you do know that?
Yes. I think he confuses himself with Krishna at times.
Well, he's absolutely convinced that he is.
The Buddhists think that everyone is God?
For this theory, there is no acceptance of God. There is simply to diminish or to nullify the sense of pains and pleasures that is called nibbana.
The atheist is the person who worries most about God. I mean, he really, God must exist, but he tries to deny him all the time. Well, like I had a lecturer at Oxford who wasn't interested in women. He was a misogynist. He talked to her, you know, gay women. And he spent all his time telling you that he wasn't interested in women. He thought about nothing but women, and the fact that he wasn't interested. His lectures were full of it. It was pathetic.
It's like cancer.
You don't like it.
Yeah.
Old man, woman.
Cancer hated Krishna, and he wanted to kill him, but all he could think about was Krishna.
Sure.
Somehow or other, it boils down that one somehow has to become Krishna conscious under some process.
Even not using that name.
Not using that name, God conscious.
That's what I said. Unitarians surprised me by having so much of this in their religion in quite a different way from a different philosophy. And of course, you begin to feel that they must be fairly active, because they were so persecuted. If a person is no real menace to you, you don't have to persecute him. Like Socrates and Christ, the hermit started
with that. Down there, with the heart, they have to speak something.
So I think that's been most fascinating for me. Very kindly.
Thank you.
And we would welcome you if you would just comply with our simple requirements. We don't have as one of our requirements the acceptance of anything other than the task of spending about the maximum hour and a half doing some simple problems. It's an open invitation.
To one of your meetings?
To the qualification.
Oh, a test. They have a test for entry into their society, and they want to know if you can take this test.
Why don't you come to our society and we test it?
Well, they say we test something different, you see.
I say, then we also test different.
That's right, sir. Right.
As we have process of test, we have also process of test.
And ours is just as universal.
Our process of test is how far he advanced in God done. That is our test. Rāva bhaktasya kutu mahata guna. It is said, jashyātri bhakti bhagavat patiṃśa. Anyone who has developed God consciousness, all good qualities are developed in there. All good qualities.
Rāva
bhaktasya kutu mahata guna. And one who has not developed Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, he cannot have any good quality, because his business is mental speculation. Manorakena asatun dhavatun. by simply mental speculation, he is fixed up in this material world.
Mental speculation alone is sterile.
Mental speculation. Yeah. Manorathena. Ratha means chariot. One is driving on the chariot of mind. Manorathena. The chariot of mind is taking, is fixing only on the material conditions. So long, if one remains in the material conditions of life, he cannot have any good quality. One has to transcend this material platform, come to the spiritual platform. Then his natural good qualities will come out.
This, of course, is the basis to of real.
For example, our boys, the European American boys, they were addicted to illicit sex life. They were addicted for meat eating. They are addicted to drinking. They are addicted to gambling. Now they are given up. Everything. There is no illicit sex in our society. There is no gambling. There is no meat eating. There is not even smoking or taking drinking tea. How it is possible? They were addicted to all these things from the beginning of their life. Now they have given up. If you take this as good quality, then you have already developed besides others. Why? Because due to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes in America, the authorities, they are surprised. They want to consult us on that. Yeah, how you people have given us this entire LSD. We are spending so much money to stop this bad habit. But how it is that your members, your students have given us this? Not only LSD, all kinds of intoxicants. So if you take it as a good quality, then good quality is developing due to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, this is a fact. One who has no Krishna consciousness, has no good consciousness, he may go on speculating, but he will never come to the platform of goodness. That is our test.
That is most impressive, that giving up those things which are really, if they were inessentials, it would be good to give them up. Since they are harmful, it's even more beneficial. And how that can be achieved in the modern world is quite remarkable thing.
Would you say that you agree with the Swami that some of the bases of religion are essential and therapeutically useful, valid?
I think again it depends upon the person. I should say to lots of people they are essential, or you might even go farther, as Jung would say, that to everybody they're essential, but they mean something different to different types of people. From the very pictorial, the bottom end, if we like it, and along here to the very abstract. But the people who lack it do seem to lack it. It's rather like a lack of gyroscope. They've got no stability.
Yes,
they just got to wobble all over the place.
One knows every scientific truth, at least works.
I might put my own view is that I believe very much in the Christian ethics, and I could believe in Krishna ethics, if I might say. But I could also believe in that without the need to believe in Krishna or God.
Mm-hmm.
Now whether that's a delusion on my part, but I really do believe deep down inside me, and I don't know.
But the idea is how to transform that belief to practical action. That's the art.
And some people need the bridge of the Godhead to achieve it. Other people do it abstractly.
Today we went to a service, a Christian service, the first one I've been to in years. And in this vast church we walked in, there were 11 old ladies sitting in the pews. And outside I could hear the roar of traffic and people. And I began to think how much the Christian church has lost track or lost hold of being of this ability to be able to guide people to a practical application of moral and spiritual principles. So much so that no one was interested even to come.
One priest in Boston, he issued leaflet, regretting that these boys, he saw our students, he appreciated that these boys have so much after God. And they are our boys, we could not give them. Actually the same boy were there 1 year, 2 years ago. He was not going to church. He had no interest in God consciousness. But now the same boy is mad after God. And he's 24 hours in God consciousness. They're chanting Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours. How young they have become? So,
this is one of the only good points when I was talking to them the other day, that so many American churches are packed. There's a great swing towards religion in America. They're getting a lot of humbug, you know, which is just one unfortunate thing. I think I disagree with you that today theology has lost its status as the queen of science, but there seems to be a swing in my little world towards the spiritual.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, because as I say, one's been watching the swing the other way. But coming back to your point, the other vital thing, we said earlier on that be still and know. In other words, in order to get spiritual quality, you've got to have silence. Correspondingly, in the modern world, we have this neurotic desire for noise. The people can't even do a work job without having a transistor set up. But there's something psychopathic about this.
It can be used though, can't it? The Krishna people use it. The constant repetition of the name Krishna. Krishna, the idea that the ear is the most subtle of the senses.
Yes, but this reproduced noise they have would stop you from doing your work properly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Immaterial noise.
So there's the noise, background noise, wireless.
But for instance, down at our temple now, you can hear noise coming.
Oh, yes.
It's always there. 24 hours a day, because the propensity is there in this age, we're just taking advantage of it.
Well, might say you're not taking advantage of it now. You're really going back to what has always been the queen of any form of sensation, that's music. Plato's time, the old idea of the music of the sphere. Music being a fruit of love, I mean, to my mind, it's the most wonderful sound.
In Revelation, afterwards, strike the timbre on the lyre.
The only spiritual sensation many people get is from music.
Silence is defined in Bhagavad Gita as not as speaking about Krishna or hearing Krishna's name, that is silence.
But if you're silent, you can hear things, but if you're making a noise, the message doesn't come through. And if somebody else is making a noise, you've got an excuse for not getting the message. I think a lot of people, again, are afraid of getting the message, so this is a noise. Then they can say, well, of course I didn't hear it, so you mustn't blame me. Now that form of cheating, I think, is a very bad one. That's not what I call positive cheating. That's cheating yourself, which is, even more dangerous. But if you cheat the other chap, he's clever enough, he avoids the effect of it. But if you cheat yourself, you're like trying to hoist yourself up by your own bootstraps, you probably can't get out of it.
I believe that it's incumbent upon us to spread this philosophy as much as possible in this age, because it's been lost by so much noise. We also make it noisy to some people. Our message is getting through.
The traffic can be heard sometimes, even above.
One noise makes liberation, one noise makes bond. Noise must be.
But we do have in this modern world a neurotic desire for noise and novelty. There's the two things together.
Well, there again, novelty and noise are sense gratification. We want to verify
that. Well, don't you think it's also possible to argue that you only have to have novelty because you are not being satisfied?
Yes.
In other words, what's happening is you're not satisfied, so you have to have something new.
This can never be gratified. But the drive is there to gratify it.
If you go to a good play, or see a good film, or hear some good music, you feel satisfied. You don't have to rush back next night. If you've seen something before, you have a feeling that you're not
even
there. Even
then, a good play or a good music is not very long-lasting. When you come out of the theater, you're hungry. And when your hunger is satisfied, then you want some sex life. then you want to drive home fast. There's always something there to agitate material senses.
Well, the trouble is, aren't you going to lead yourself into this difficulty? If you are spiritually satisfied, you will sit down and do nothing. And if everybody were doing that, we should be rather back to where we started rather than have enough food or music or transport.
That is for the wise, not for the spirituals. The spiritual life, there is enough activity. Ballings are activity that they do not know. They mean spiritual life is void. That is negation of the present activity, or negative idea. But actually, when you stop material activity, here real activity begins. That is spiritual life. The spirit soul is active.
You cannot stop it.
Now it is acting through these coverings of material, matter. Therefore it is imperfect activity. Man in the activity is uncovered by material things. That is real activity.
But aren't desires biological goals?
And they're necessary.
Yes, but they're biologically necessary rather than spiritually necessary.
Well, then may I say, let's go farther. But when you say biologically necessary, is it necessary for anything to be alive? Not scientifically,
isn't it? Even Prabhupada has told us that even in the spiritual world, there's a desire to have the senses active, enjoy. Have the senses enjoy. Is that so?
Yes.
Well, I think you need, I'm greedy, I was going to say you need both. I want spiritual life, material life. And
social thing is spiritual thing, isn't it? I mean, it's like people talking about China or New York. I've always got different ideas about it. And in fact, it might even be a different place.
Well, it's to each person, his picture is different too.
But the idea there is that spiritual activity, everything is seen in relationship to God.
Yes.
You serve God with your every activity.
This same example, just like this finger is part and parcel of body. So long it is attached with the body, it has got activity. You cut it from my body, it has no activity.
Yes, but you've still got a body.
Huh?
You've still got a body and you've still got some other fingers left.
No, you can call it a finger, yes. But it is not act as finger.
I don't see the need for your analogy.
The God is there, and we are His servants.
If we are part and parcel of God, then we must be active in serving God. That is my analogy.
But I don't see the need for analogy, but that statement itself is sufficient.
There must be need. If you know that you are part and parcel of God, then you must act for God.
See, I would go the other way around and say, as long as I know God is past and past,
you cannot care. There's a God is the spirit, and you are spirit. Therefore, we have to take lessons from God. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Mama Imamsa Jiva Buddha, these living entities are my part and part. So, because part and parcel of God, therefore, the part and parcel must be active on account of God. That is real life. Why stop activity? That is real life.
I fear, Swami, if I may say so without disrespect, that in some ways you're preaching to the converted and you only make it more muddled for me by giving analogies. Don't you feel out of time?
Yeah, I think the Swami is used to talking to people that need this.
Yes.
Never mind
them.
The
but when there is a truth spoken by God that living entities are my part and parcel, only one. So why shall I not give the analogy? How the part and parcel acts? I must give an analogy. Otherwise, how they can understand?
Like some people
for understanding, analogy must be there. Analogy is created for understanding.
But not in any, just in an example, a lot of people try and give an analogy to explain entropy. Now, of course,
I do not know what other people give the analogy, but my business is that we take it from Bhagavad Gita that living entities are part and parcel. miracle of God. Therefore, just like this part and parcel of my body is active in relationship with this body, but it is cut off from the body, it is no more active. Similarly, those who are not active in rendering service to God, they are as dead as these things are cut off from the body. So they have to be allocated to the consciousness. That is, this tree, you cut it, it has no consciousness to protest. But even an ant, a small ant, because it is developed consciousness, if you try to kill it, it will protest. That means the more consciousness you develop, you become active. That is nature. To develop consciousness does not mean to become dead.
This is what I said earlier on, that the whole of the human...
So therefore, when one comes to God consciousness, it becomes more active.
The whole evolution, I think I may have said quite clearly, the whole evolution of the human mind is to become more and more in conscious control.
So mind, activities of mind, material intelligence, and activity of spirit. The spiritual activity is more greater than the mind, mental activity.
The other day we were discussing Socrates, and Socrates' method was to bring the self under control by inspecting oneself, know thyself, and thereby be a moral life through self-inspection, self-control. But Prabhupada was saying that this is not an ordinary thing. Not many men can achieve this rational control. So by simply cultivating spirit, nourishing the spiritual life, any man can control his senses.
But
a child
is active, but his frivolous activities or mischievous activities stop when he is active in taking education. The same child, his energy for becoming active is transferred for taking education. He is no more acting mischievously, breaking these wings and doing that. The activity is there. Now that is purified. Similarly, spiritual life means the spiritual activity that is purified activity. These boys that they've given up drinking, meat eating, that does not mean they stop eating. They're eating better things. Therefore they have given up. The nonsense is. So that is spiritual life. Spiritual life means activity purified.
Rationally, I was thought to be intelligent, I went to college, got so many degrees, but I could not in the least control my senses and control my mind. Even though I tried, I studied philosophy so hard. But by simply chanting Hare Krishna and coming to this platform of service for God, all my activities became dovetailed in one direction, so that the other things were automatically brought into control as a result.
If one gets good engagement, he gives up bad engagement. But he cannot make him inactive. That is not possible. Because the soul is active, it is living. How you can make it inactive? That is not possible. Nirvana means stop nonsense, but take to spiritual life. That is the next Atatha Brahma Jitana. Nirvana does not mean to stop activities, to stop nonsense activities, come to the real activities.
So anima, the word that many people use for the soul, also means of course life, that you use the anima, the two are synonymous.
It's just like you were saying a while ago, that if you are in God consciousness, you need not wear the robe. That's also our philosophy. It's very practical. But your consciousness would be always serving Krishna, always serving God, in whatever status of life you have. It isn't necessary to put on the robe first and then become God consciousness.
But it helps some people.
This one is a very interesting concept of soul as well. The fact that the soul is quantifiable, it exists in a smaller part in the lower animals, such as reserve, and the higher part is the higher animal.
No, it's the same size in all animals.
Ah, it is. Oh, yeah. I didn't say that. Now, but what happens when you reach a point where you don't know whether they're living things or not? You know, the amino acids and things like that.
Well, I would take up that straight away fundamentally. It's perfectly correct to say it's the same size as everything, but it has no size.
Yeah,
so it has size.
It has size.
Well, I mean,
you cannot measure it.
No, except for me, therefore the word size is a permissible
But that is not a scientific statement, because you have no measuring instrument. You cannot say it has no size.
In other words, what you say is it's not got three dimensions. When we talk about size...
Yes, three dimensions, it is said. It is estimated. The 10,000 part of the tip of the hair.
Yes,
we can do better than that with a micron.
Then find out the soul, if you have got an instrument.
How about the angels on the end of the pinnacle pole?
Exactly, this is coming back to that, the analogy again.
The whole thing sounds like the summa contra gentile, isn't it? But in Krishna instead of time.
But your own business, if you try to explain
the geometry, they say. The point has no length, no breadth. But that is not fair. The point has length and breadth, but you cannot measure it.
Ah, but a mathematician would say that that is the definition of a point is something that has no breadth or depth. For his purpose of working out his philosophy.
And Plato would say something entirely different. He'd say that the absolute point...
But you can magnify the point, he'd find it.
But coming back...
It is the question of vision. In your present imperfect vision, you do not see. But if you take a magnifying glass, you see how there is length and breadth.
Ah, but that brings you, Swami, straight away into the problem of the infinite regress.
Whatever
you get smaller and smaller, and you know, you might just well stop at the beginning, which you're never going
to
stop at
the end. The smaller to the smaller.
that is stated in the very best. God is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest.
This is you're using materialist words, Swami. You're using materialist words, greater and smaller.
What do you mean by spiritual?
No, but see, you're using materialist words to describe them.
But what do you mean by spiritual? No speaking?
Well, I say that.
Okay. If I say greater and smaller in this way, and you say this is material, then what is the spiritual expression of this? Can you give me?
What is the answer?
That means stop talking.
You don't need it.
Then we need to. This is not material. When you speak in spiritual connection, this is spiritual.
You have to invent a new language, right?
No. Why invent? The same language. The same language.
Well, you don't get very far in any form of philosophy if you don't invent a new language.
No, you don't get very far if you do. But the consciousness in which something is done denotes it. For instance, I can be sweeping the street, and someone will think, oh, I'm just a material street sweeper. But if I'm doing it for Krishna, it's a transcendental activity, the spiritual activity, not a material activity.
Ah, yes, but I mean, you then, if you have a sort of somebody else who's sweeping faster and better, do you say that he's greater spiritually when he's doing...
No.
No, the purpose might be Krishna. The purpose might be for Krishna.
So if we're speaking about Krishna, then our words become spiritual.
Yes, but I think if you're talking about spiritual things, you mustn't try and quantify it.
Mm-hmm. Spiritual means it has no material qualities.
It's the old business of trying
Nirvana to... Krishna sambandhi dipta bhairava.
You can't measure the beauty of a rose with a ruler.
No, but you can say it's like this, it's like that. You have to be able to describe it somehow. This probability in relationship.
Actually, in a higher sense, there is nothing material. Because everything is emanating from God, therefore everything is spiritual.
Well, that's true, but the electron, as far as you can say, may be spiritual.
There is no distinction in higher sense. Because we say that everything that we see, that is manifestation of God's energy. So in that sense, if it is God's energy, there is nothing material. It is material when we forget God. That is it.
But Well, I would have said it really, but rather going back to the analogy of the light. If there's no light there, you can't see whether there's anything there or not. Unless you have the light, it enables you to see it. But the things exist independent of whether the light is there or not.
The light is the intelligence of the fire. So light is not different from the fire. Unless there is fire, there is no light, there is no heat. So as soon as you feel heat or see light, the fire is there. In higher sense, those who can realize, immediately realize that there is fire. Just like here, there is light. Immediately you can understand there is fire. There is electricity. So it is a question of realization. In the higher realization, there is nothing matter. Everything is spiritual. Simply, when you forget God, that is matter. That is matter.
Well, by using this analogy, it's proving that there's contingency. There's a thing that wherever there's heat and wherever there's light, there must be fire.
Well, with respect, no, we didn't have an infrared thing which is not fire.
Original source.
No.
How can you explain light without fire?
Ultraviolet light doesn't have fire.
Ultraviolet, there is sun.
How can you produce ultraviolet light except with electricity?
Light and heat you cannot think of without fire.
Fluorescence of certain chemicals.
But the origin is.
No,
you're really using the word.
There is no light, no heat without fire. That is a fact.
I think when the
Wittgenstein
there, it's also mentioned.
Yes, you see, that's the trouble. I mean, you can say, really, that there's no light or heat without molecular movement. That's as far as you need. You don't need to go any further.
No, the point you were making, that there's this absolute source of everything, is the sun. Yeah, was that
that is heat, that is fire.
Even if it's not there now, it was there 1,000 years ago.
It's gone through the different transformation. Mm-hmm.
But this is a form of scientific atomism.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather outmoded. It was a useful concept long ago, but that's got beyond that now.
So it then takes...
So we have to go down and down.
Most interesting indeed.
Yes, but as old Kayan says, the doctrine of Satan and here, great argument.
Oh.
Yes, we shall talk more in this next.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much and it's very kind of you. Where are you going on Wednesday? Where are you going?
I'm going to Mumbai. Yeah.
One of my greatest pleasures was to be able to entertain the Dalai Lama's secretary at Luncheon Hall in the Kuzin just near here.
We went walking there one morning, Lincoln's Inn. Remember where that was?
Yes, I've always wanted to go there. We've got 4 Tibetans over studying up on part of the College of State of Hampton. Mm. And I've always liked the idea of going up in those wonderful mountains. Although you may say, one mustn't overvalue material things, as far as their diet is concerned, they must be very much like the followers. You know, because they have the most perfect dentition. They have nothing wrong with their gums or their teeth. They must be about the only place in the world.
Oh, but it's all his teeth too. He's nearly 80.
Yeah, I've made that sense.
Perfect diet.
Thank you for sparing his time again.
Such short notice, I didn't realize that there was such a pleasure, and I was so glad you were able to fit it in before you go.
Oh. And he's going to speak now down the temple, and he's going to say something more.
Well, I don't know. I should imagine the crowd is so great.
Oh, you can see the front.
Well, we will see when we go down, I think. I must take
No.
My spiritual...